at the end of the day, this is where I got my love for storytelling, is from this guy right here. So to be able to sit here and tell stories every week with him and listen to stories, it's a dream come true.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
Hey everyone, Art Eddy here for The Art of Fatherhood, and this week's episode is being brought to you by Semper Smart Games. And I'm very fortunate to be actually talking with Jim Morin, who started Semper Smart Games. A lot of great games that are educational. For my listeners out there, give a brief summary of Semper Smart Games and why people should pick them up, sir.
Well, we're a fairly young company, but a few years ago with my own kids, I kind of set out on a journey to teach critical skills and knowledge that kids have a hard time learning, but through active and engaging play. I started with my PlaySmart dice system with some fun games that teach math fact fluency, kind of mental math in a fun way that you can play for minutes at a time or over longer periods with your family around the table, on the go, or wherever. And then we use kind of those dice that are uniquely numbered and emphasize better math operations that they than normal dice and operations that they struggle with in games like Election Night, where they're running for president and they have to learn about the Electoral College and have to make meaningful strategy decisions. Some other games, Math-Tac-Toe, which is a multi-skill level game where you can have an addition card playing a multiplication card and some more advanced math operations going on, fun for the whole family.
And he creates so many fun games, different types of levels of games for all different types of families. Support this guy and support his family because he's doing really good things. But check more out at SemperSmartGames.com. What's going on, everybody? Art Eddy here for another edition of the Art of Fatherhood podcast. And this is such an awesome episode because I don't have just a dad. I got two dads, a father and son combo. If you're into baseball, if you're into country music, you're into radio, you definitely know these guys. It's none other than Jeff and Tim Kirchen. Thanks for taking the time, gentlemen. How you doing, Tim?
I'm really well. Thank goodness I have my son next to me because the technology has completely overwhelmed me. If it weren't for him, I couldn't get through the day. I drive to Philadelphia from Maryland. It's almost 3 hours. So I can sit in this room because it's a better look and it's a better sound. But mostly it's because he's sitting next to me, because when something goes wrong with technology, I can't even begin to tell you the level of panic that I feel. I feel none of it when I'm sitting next to my magician son.
Well, let me just say, as a radio guy, the level of panic is still high. And you can relate to this. Yep. You know, you finish an interview and you realize, oh my gosh, someone's mic was shut off. And now you got to do the, we've all been through it. I just think I have a little more knowledge to help get through the problems.
Well, here's what happened to me the other day on SportsCenter. My mic was not working. And I'm doing a stand-up with Shay Cornett, who's 20 feet away from me, and she recognizes immediately that my mic doesn't work, which I didn't know that. So she runs over next to me, and I'm thinking, what are you doing? Well, she had to get next to me so I could talk into her microphone. This is what happened on ESPN the other day. Fortunately, we had a little fun with it. But I repeat, every time there is technology and I'm involved, something could go wrong. But as long as he's here, we're fine.
So like Jeff, I got to say also hello to you, because I was talking to your dad first, especially in radio. Obviously TV as well, Tim. If you make a mistake, you just roll with it. You can make a joke of it and then go on. But if you like fumble over your words, you don't keep on fumbling. You just move on to the next, right?
Right. Well, there's no way around that. It's like famously the poor lady in Miami years ago, she's reading off her teleprompter and she said, and then the veterans of World War XI came home. She didn't realize these are Roman numerals. She said World War XI and never stopped, just kept on going.
She pulled a Ron Burgundy. But Jeff, man, how are you doing?
I'm great. You know, it's been a dream come true to be able to put a podcast together. And I have to give you a lot of credit here, because we launched this podcast a couple days before opening day, about a week before, to promote, hey, on opening day, our first episode. And you were the first one to come right into my email saying, I have this podcast, Art of Fatherhood. You've had Jay Billis on, you've had Kurt Busch on, and now you've had the two shortest father-son duo. probably in the history. Sorry to steal your joke there, Dad. I know you were thinking of using that one on this podcast, but this has been a dream come true. I've worked in radio for a long time, about 10 years, Cleveland morning radio, then Vegas, and now I've been in Philadelphia for just about 2 years. But at the end of the day, this is where I got my love for storytelling, is from this guy right here. So to be able to sit here and tell stories every week with him and listen to stories, it's a dream come true.
Yeah, you both are great storytellers. I love the fact that, Jeff, you can write a song in 10 minutes and kind of redo it and all that stuff for your the morning show that you're on. I love that because it shows that you guys have a lot of creativity and talent. Jeff, you can go first and then Tim, you can follow up. Whether they're comedians, actors, and like, oh, what do your kids think? Like, that's right. It's just dad. He's doing his job, right? But for you to get into broadcasting and get into radio and all that, was there a time where you were like, man, what my dad does is awesome. I kind of want to follow suit. Was it kind of like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I very much feel as if he has always been my personal and my professional hero. And there's no doubt about that in my mind. I've always looked up to my dad and said, man, if I could do... I looked more at his passion for what he does and said, if I could be that passionate about what I do for a living, I'm going to be happy. So I think his passion is really what inspired me. However, at the end of the day, I ended up in broadcasting, maybe not baseball or sports related, but, you know, on a country morning show, you know, I take calls, I tell stories, I meet listeners, I give away prizes. In a way, it's very similar because it's that storytelling broadcasting life that I've learned every day from him. My dad used to, I remember this like it was yesterday. We'd watch a baseball game or we'd go see the newest Disney movie. And he would say, tell me that movie in 15 seconds or less. And he was teaching me to be able to be a concise and quick storyteller. And right. It's a skill that, you know, I was not the kid who came home from school and said, how was your day? Good. Mm-mm. That was not allowed in our household.
Right. For instance, I asked Jeffrey and his sister Kelly when they were like 5 and 7. We watched October Sky, which is a great movie. So I said to Jeffrey, what was that movie about? Okay. And he said, well, it was about a rocket. You know, he's 5 years old. Okay. And Kelly, who was 7, looked at me and thought about it. And she said, that movie was about a father and a son. And that's when we knew Kelly had some depth to her. But Jeffrey's seminal moment to me, as far as following me or doing any of this, was when we went to Cooperstown when he was 10 years old. And I'm taking him there for an induction, and I'm working the entire induction. It's so great. And I'm on Radio Row doing a bunch of radios, and some New York producer, a small radio station in New York, comes to Jeffrey and says, how would you like to do 8 minutes on what it's like to be a 10-year-old at Cooperstown? And Jeffrey did 8 minutes at age 10. And when it was over, he came up to me that moment and said, Dad, this is what I want to do. He was 10 years old when the light went on.
Well, and you mentioned even before we started recording that I've got the radio headphones and everything. Yeah. I wanted to be these two college students. It was WFUV, Bob Ahrens. I'll never forget. He's the first one who put me on the radio. And I wanted to be them. I wanted to be the one interviewing somebody. So like when we have this podcast together, yeah, we're a father-son duo, but I love just sitting and interviewing my dad because it's the coolest thing I get to do is talk to my personal hero every single week. It's really great.
And when I wrote my second book, we did a little tiny little TV piece for a tiny little TV station in Montgomery County, Maryland, where we live. And Jeffrey, age 12, served as the host of the show. Like he did the open. He welcomed me. He said, Dad, tell me about your newest book. Is this a great game or what? He interviewed me through it, and then he closed it, and it was unbelievably smooth, to which the producer said, how many times have you done this before? And he goes, that's the first time I've ever done this. Another seminal moment. That's when we knew Jeffrey was born to do something like this.
I love that. This podcast that you guys have just launched, again, congrats on that. Especially with your busy careers, how long did this take to like be in the works? Like, you can answer first, Tim, and then Jeff, you can follow suit. But like, you had the idea, maybe talked about it, like maybe at a dinner table and all that. But when was the idea all the way now to finally where you were launching it? Like, how long did it take?
Right. Well, it's taken years, but if you're going to do something like this, you have to wait for the right time. And I just never found the right time because we've had a lot of grief in our family. We lost my brother to ALS. I was not in the right frame of mind to do anything. But once Once the new year came and I looked at the baseball season and I said, I need something more satisfying. I need something else to make me stop thinking about the death of my brother. So I said, I need something good in my life. I have so much good in my life. But I said, why not try this thing with Jeffrey? This is what he's wanted to do. So I just made a decision. I called him one day and I said, Jeff, we're going to do the podcast. I don't know how we do it, but we're going to do it. And now we actually have done it.
We've done it. And it's true. We needed the time in both of our lives, but especially with my dad. And you know, a lot of people don't realize this when you talk about the art of fatherhood. Not only I say he's my professional hero, but also my personal hero. My grandmother, his mom, moved in with our family when I was about a sophomore in high school. That was 2008, 2009. And he, along with his brother, took care of her in our home for years until she passed away in 2020. So 12 years, 13 years. And before that, my grandparents lived next door to us, so we were. And he was always taking care of her. When she passed away after Alzheimer's and dementia, 96 years old, amazing. Shortly thereafter, ALS hit our family with the diagnosis of my uncle, his brother, who lived two streets down from us. So my dad's been a caretaker for a long, long time. When his kids left for college, he was a caretaker. When we both moved out, he was a caretaker. And it wasn't until now that he was really able to focus on anything but baseball and ESPN work and taking care of the family that is in his home. So I that's why I feel so close to my dad when it comes to him being my personal hero, because he has taught me so many lessons, way more important than how to tell a good story or how to land a good punchline. He's taught me how to take care of family.
I got goosebumps right now because that's what it's all about, right? This is I'm so glad you guys were able to do this podcast, because this is what I want my listeners to hear about. Like, this is, you know, I always bring good guys that are, you know, role models, not just in their craft and their profession, but at home. And obviously, Jeff, I know I'm preaching the choir, but like, Tim, like, I see you on and off, like, you know, with ESPN, and then I hear stories, whether it's on Levitard or I added the chance to interview a few years ago, maybe I think for one of your books, and I just really enjoyed your take on fatherhood. So having you guys on here is fantastic. And you want to lead by example. You just don't want to talk the talk. You want to walk the walk. And for you, Tim, to kind of be that sandwich parent, like, we always have that. Like, I think my wife and I were in our 40s now, and we're kind of like taking care of our two daughters who are 16 and 13. And then we're taking care of our two dads. Our moms passed away. You're taking care of both. And you want to like leave that example for your kids. Like, hey, you're going to take care of everybody you love, and you want that. So the fact that, you know, one of the questions I always ask is, what is something that your kids have taught you about life or yourself before, like, and you kind of notice it once you became a dad? I can almost seem like Jeff already answered that question, being a caretaker and not only being a role model and your hero and, you know, professional, but life at home. When you hear those words, Tim, that Jeff has been saying about you, it's not like validation, but it must feel good as a father for everything that you've laid down to being like, yes, the things I wanted to portray as a dad and live and fulfill as a dad just come through the words of Jeff right there, right?
Yes. And this all, of course, comes from my mother and father, Nana and Pop. And as Jeffrey said, we lived right next door to my mother and father for 10 years. I grew up essentially without grandparents because two of them lived in England and one was gone. And I saw my grandmother in Massachusetts once in a while. My son and my daughter lived right next to their grandparents, and they saw them every day. That was an absolutely critical part of their upbringing. And my father, who was a good baseball player and had a love and a feel for the game like almost no one I've ever met, baseball was the primary language that we spoke in my house growing up. So that's where I got that from. But I also got the respect for people from my mother and from my father. And that's what we've tried to pass along. We named Jeff after my father, and our podcast, Is This a Great Game or What, was something that my dad used to say all the time. He would read the box scores. He would look at the statistics. He would slap his forehead and go, how can you explain this? Is this a great game or what? So I wrote a book with that title. And now I have a podcast with that title with my son.
And not to mention too, you know, greater than the podcast, in order to do this kind of independently, we created a production company, whatever that means, but it's basically an LLC that kind of houses the work we do, whether it's on social media, and it's called Joy Pop Productions. Joy is my grandmother's name. Pop is what we called my grandfather in Productions. And so that was our homage, in addition to, is this a great game or what, to my grandparents, my dad's parents.
This is it keeps on getting better and better. It's like one of those like stories you can't put down, and it's just like, this is fantastic. So when I did ask Tim when I had him on before, like, what was it like when what popped into his mind when he found out I was going to be a dad? You are a dad now, Jeff. So when you found out you were going to be a dad, what was going through your mind for the first time?
Well, I've always said that I wanted to be a dad. And I feel like, I don't want to say that's untraditional for little boys to think about that growing up. Hey, yeah, one day I want to be a dad, because you always think, you know, little girls play with dolls. I wasn't playing with baby dolls, but seeing my dad be my best friend growing up, I said, I want a little best friend just like he had. And so when we first found out, it was very, very emotional. I don't want to cry now thinking about it, but it was very emotional, because my wife and I, we got married in 2022 and then quickly moved out to Philadelphia for the job opportunity here. And what was a great job opportunity was a pretty tumultuous year to get married, pack up a house we built in Las Vegas, and drive across the country to start a new job on the East Coast. My wife is born and raised in Las Vegas. It was a very difficult time. And we found out in November, shortly before Thanksgiving, shortly before Christmas, that we were pregnant. And I remember my parents came into town, and we went out to a little place in Skipack, PA, and we sat down and we told them, and I put the video on Twitter, and everybody was just loving that they could see Tim Kirkson's reaction to now being thrice a grandfather, because my sister was expecting at the time with her second when we said, hey, and it's going to be three. But the funniest story about learning about being pregnant was when we found out we were having a girl. And my dad called after the news. We were all on a big video call. And after the news, he said, I want to talk to you about that. He said, having a girl is the greatest thing in the world. And this is your firstborn, which is also the greatest. Now, as his only son and the second born, I took a pretty pregnant pause thinking, okay, so what did you think about when I came along? Jokes aside, he's right, though. The connection that a father has with a daughter. I made a joke the other day, and I hope not to offend anybody or my dad here. I don't know if I would love her as much as if she was a boy. I know that's not true. You have two girls, so you know this, but there's a certain bond and protection that I feel over her. And I think that will never, ever leave. And when I would watch Father of the Bride speeches or the movie and see these guys crying, I got it. Now it's a totally different emotion. So being a girl dad is amazing, and it's a blessing. And I'm just so happy, and so happy to give my dad another grandchild.
Right. Well, the first look, which you will go through at some point when your daughter gets married, the first look is when the father of the bride walks in and sees his daughter for the first time in her wedding dress. And of course, I burst into tears, because it was as emotional as anything I've ever done. When Jeffrey got married, we had the father of the groom ceremony, where I get the first look at Jeffrey, and I walk into his room where he's getting dressed, and he's in his boxer shorts with black socks, and he's drinking a beer. It's just not the same as the first look with your daughter. That's the difference for the father of the bride compared to the father of the groom. It's all the same, but there's something special, as you said, about a father and his daughter.
Yeah, I think I screwed that up. I wanted you to come get ready with the groom.
I'm well aware what you were trying to do.
Man, he had the full tux on, and he looked great. And here I was drinking a White Claw, sitting on a couch in a Vegas hotel. It was not romantic at all. I apologize for that, but it did make a great story.
It did. And then, of course, he showed me how to tie my bow tie, because I couldn't figure out, don't you be talking about my bow tie. I didn't know how to put a bow tie on. So there we are. That was our big, real warm moment. My son showed me how to tie a bow tie.
Love it. And I think, Tim, you can vouch for this as well. You know, there is that strong bond being a girl dad, but also, too, as they get older, they're going to protect you as well. They're going to look out for you. They're going to, like, both of them, like, hey, dad, how's your day? Like, do you interview anybody cool today? And obviously I'll be able to, like, I interviewed two awesome people today. But like, just the idea of, like, they really care. And I don't think like anybody should take offense to what you said, Jeff, where it's like, I don't think it'd be different. I think it would be different if it was a boy. I think it is like, you know, God works in mysterious ways. And like, you have what you have. Like I am the third, and I'm a traditionalist. And I was, if we had a son, I was going to name him the fourth. My wife doesn't care for my name. And I understand that. Right. And one of my friends was like, what are you trying to build a dynasty? I mean, like King Arthur. I'm like, listen, I just want that. We had two girls, so we didn't have to worry about that. And everyone's like, are you just going to try for a boy? I have known people that tried for the other gender and they've had a hockey team of all boys or like a hockey team of all girls just because they kept on trying for the other gender. And like after like the seventh kid, you have the same gender. Like, I don't think you're going to have that other gender. So I like,
have to throw in the towel funny, at right? that point. Absolutely. So,
you know, especially as anybody can hear through this interview, family is so key for you guys in your lives and stuff. So as you're raising your daughter, what are some of the things that your parents have taught you that you're going to try and instill into your daughter?
Mutual respect. I think that is by far, you know, I did not grow up in a household. I don't ever remember being yelled at. I don't ever remember really being grounded. And I know I say that and people are like, what? And now when I ask my parents about it, my mom specifically, she says, well, you guys were just good kids. But everybody says that, right? Like moms 30 years later are like, oh, when you came into the world, it was the best thing ever. And now that I've gone through that, I'm sure it was not. But what the mutual respect does is when I would do something that would upset my parents, like I'll never forget this. And I don't even know if I've brought this up to my dad. But I butt dialed him once when I was in high school and I was with my buddies, my idiot friends in my car. And we were all probably saying very unsavory language because we're boys and we're 15 and we don't care. And my dad took me up the street and we walked and he said, listen, you called me and I'm just very disappointed in what the language I heard you saying in representing our family and me and your mother. And I just don't want you speaking like that around others. It's just not the way we raised you. There wasn't a, how dare you, all this stuff. But the disappointment in his voice in letting him down because we have a mutual love and respect for each other, that was way worse.
Yeah.
Way worse than getting my car taken away or not being able to go out Friday night. I immediately burst into tears, felt so terrible because this is my best friend. This is my father. This man I respect who respects me and was almost saying, Jeff, you're better than that. We raised you better than that. And he held us to a standard that said, you need to live up to what you're capable of. This wasn't you need to live up to what we make you do. It's you have big dreams and a big heart and you're better than that. And that style of parenting is something I'm going to carry in with our daughter McKinley and whatever future children.
Right. And that was the number one rule with my dad. I can remember my dad got mad at me twice in my entire life, twice. And both were because I disrespected, not on purpose, an elder. I'll never forget. This was awful, but I'll never forget. I was 5 years old and Mr. Menapace came over to greet the family. And being 5 years old, I called him Mr. Toothpaste. And my dad was furious. And he just drilled me right there. Like, how dare you talk to our guests like that? I also said something about a coach or a teacher once, and he shook his finger at me. He said, that's an adult. That is a teacher. That is a coach. Whether they're good or bad, you respect them. And that's what I have carried on from my parents for my entire life.
Love it. And yeah, I mean, I think the world needs more of that. Just respect and just, you know, mutual respect. So that's great. Just kind of turn into sports, and it doesn't have to be for sports, but obviously you guys are talking about baseball for your podcast, so you can be to that. I know you mentioned Cooperstown, but whatever, you know, bond you have with your kid, whether it's going to see Marvel movies or going to the diamond for a game and all that, there is that thing that you look forward to. So Tim, what can you kind of share, like a fun moment you experienced, you know, since you were talking about earlier and Jeff kind of took a little caution too when you said like, oh, the girl's best and all this other stuff. Talk about, I'm just joking, but talk about the bond, like whether it's a game or something that you will always cherish with Jeff.
Well, Jeffrey was a pretty good little league baseball player. And We played a game one day at Darnestown Park, which isn't far from our house, and my father was with me. And again, my dad was a really good player. My two brothers are in the Hall of Fame for baseball at Catholic University. This was a baseball family. So Jeffrey's a decent little player, and we go play at Darnestown Park, and I'm standing next to my dad, and Jeffrey's first at bat is against, what was the kid's name?
Nick Pack.
Nick Pack, big left-handed kid. He threw hard. I think we can all remember our Little League days when there's a kid way bigger than us that throws way harder right. than we've ever seen
we
before.
We were nine, and he was like 5'6", which yeah. is like huge, but he was probably 180. And
he was just way bigger than me. Let's put
can
it
you
that
check
way.
The birth certificate, please, before this kid continues to play, right?
Back, yeah.
Right. So I'm a little worried because Jeffrey's a good little player, but this kid's way bigger. He throws way harder. And first at bat, Jeffrey hits a ground ball double over third base, pulls the ball down the third base line for a double. And I'm standing right next to my father and the look on his face as we shared the biggest hit, at least at that point in Jeffrey's career. That's a moment I'll never forget.
And I got to say, though, like to me, when you said about like the big picture, eighth grade where I'm playing for my elementary school or middle school is like a combined elementary and middle school. But I remember same type of pitcher, like just like you look like a dragon out there, right? Just throwing heat. Right. And I'm like, I had my growth spurt maybe junior in high school. So I was a little runt. And I just remember even the other team, I'm surprised, like this is eighth grade. The coaches are allowing it, but like, it's like, you're gonna swing. Like you're gonna strike out. You suck. I'm like, okay. And, but this kid was intimidating. I did not swing for 1, 2, 3, I'm out. And I'm just like, yeah, I knew that was going to happen. So you had much more success than I did, Jeff, but is there a bonding moment that you always look back on with your dad, whether it's sports or whatever, that you will always cherish?
So it was, I had the opportunity to go to Cooperstown with my whole family. So it's just my sister and my mom as well, a couple of years. But that first trip that we took to Cooperstown, just the two of us, was very special. But then we went again, and it was Cal Ripken and Tony Gwynn's year. And we had the world's largest minivan. It was a Honda Odyssey, and it had the drop-down TV in the back. And my dad's favorite TV show growing up was Get Smart. He loved Get Smart. And so obviously he's driving and I'm 13 or something in the back of the car. And I said, I want to watch Get Smart. And we're driving to Cooperstown and he's not watching, but he knows every line that's about to happen. And at one point I said, Dad, I'm sorry. I'm loving this show. I want to hit next episode. He goes, no, I'm loving it too. It's keeping me entertained. I thought he would want to talk, but of course he's reliving this and it's his favorite show and he's watching his son in the back laugh hysterically at some of his favorite moments that he laughed at when he was my age. And so that entire trip, I have to say, but specifically sharing that moment with you and sharing your favorite show while I'm sitting in the back of the minivan listening and he's listening and I'm watching Get Smart, that was one of those moments where it was a really special weekend and a great way to kick it off.
And this is when I knew Jeffrey really had something working for him. Cal Ripken's speech when he was inducted, and Jeffrey was there. And he had met Cal Ripken a couple times before. Cal Ripken's speech, the Hall of Fame, was amazing. It starts out with Cal Ripken talking about a time he did a demonstration at a camp. There are like 200 kids there. And he explains who he is in case somebody doesn't know. And he says, you know, I made 20 all-star teams. I won 2 MVPs, all this stuff. And at the end, one of the kids who's like 8 years old comes up to him and says, am I supposed to know who you are like that? And Cal, it was so beautiful that this kid really didn't know who he was. So after Ripken makes the speech, after I interview Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken, we bring Jeffrey in to, you know, say hi. And Jeffrey looks at Cal Ripken and says, am I supposed to know who you are like that? It was just beautiful. And I've never seen Cal Ripken laugh quite like that because he was so flattered that a 12-year-old would recognize that was the key part of the speech. He remembered it. He repeated it. And Cal Ripken laughed. So that's when I said, all right, Jeffrey's got something going here.
I love that. That's amazing. It's funny you mentioned, like, you know, Get Smart. That was such a great show back then. The timing, the comedy and all that, the one-liners. But it's funny, like my youngest started getting into The Simpsons. And so all the lines I would say throughout their, you know, childhood as they're growing up, like, oh, purple's a fruit. And they're all, and they're like, she's like, everything you said to me were Simpson lines. Huh? I'm like, yep, you're finding that out right now. So I love that.
That's funny because my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, he quotes more of The Office and Parks and Recreation than anybody I've ever met. He's got a steel trap memory. And one day his kids are going to watch The Office and go, "Dad, none of your jokes were original." And it's the same with the amount of times my dad from Hogan's Heroes made me go, "Hogan," all the time.
Yeah, we stole from the best, and that's okay too. We share. And speaking of The Office, by the way, I don't read Twitter much. It doesn't do me much good. But somebody wrote on Twitter that Tim Kirkchin looks like Steve Carell is going to look when he gets really, really old. That's what he put on Twitter. I looked it up. I'm 3 years older, only 3 years than Steve Carell. But this is what he's going to look like me when he gets really, really old. So I took it as a compliment as Steve Carell, but I'm not sure the age really worked.
I love that. Yeah, you said the looks like you do such. I like one of the best things in my life is like for like brings me joy is when you're on the Levitard show and you do and like you just start immediately laughing before they even get to the punchline, Tim. I love it.
It is so cleverly written. And I was in the Denver airport once and this guy accosted me, tackled me at the airport. He doesn't even say hello. He says, "I did a looks like for Levitard, sent it into the show. They read it on the air and you laughed at it." He said, "It was the highlight of my entire life that one of my lookalikes actually appeared on the Levitard show. You heard it and you laughed at it." I mean, this is where we are on this.
I love it. Love it. So good. All right. You guys have been so gracious with your time. I know you got to do other things, especially this weekend with opening weekend. So we're going to finish off the Father Quick Five. Jeff, you can go first. Tim, you can follow suit. And I know, especially for you, Jeff, with your daughter, so you know she's super young, so it's going to be like maybe you want to talk about the movie, the family movie you want to, you know, show her. So, like, favorite family movie? Do you have one that you can't wait to show her?
The Lion King.
Nice.
I think it's so beautiful. I think the music in it is incredible. I mean, Elton John. Are you kidding me? That and Tarzan. Those two movies with Phil Collins. For me, it's all about music. I grew up playing music, so it's all about the music. We sing "You'll Be in My Heart" every single night to our baby, along with a song from Pippin, "Corner of the Sky." There are two go-tos, and so definitely those two movies.
And for me, it's the Father of the Bride with Steve Martin. He does an absolutely spectacular job. When our daughter got married, Kelly got married, I did the room, you know, father of the bride speech, and I used Steve Martin all the way through it. Good news, the church is free. And he said, "Great, finally something that's free." And his wife says, "It's not free, it's available." Father of the Bride.
Nice. Favorite genre of music you can't wait to introduce her to?
Oh, I mean, probably show tunes.
Okay. Nice.
I'm a big musical guy. In fact, I put baseball aside and started performing in middle school. And my dad quickly became a theater dad, right? And he doesn't really know much about theater. So some of our favorite stories were my sister was a really, really good high school basketball player. And I was a star of a lot of the musicals and plays in school. Well, my dad's a good basketball player and he can relate, right? Oh, it's like hitting a three to tie the game with 10 seconds left, right? And then he would look at me and be like, "I don't really know how that, what you can do on the stage, but it's like hitting a high A flat, right?" And I'm like, "Sure, Dad, that works." And one of my favorite stories about theater, I played Nicely Nicely Johnson in, I have so many good theater stories with Dad. And I didn't tell him that at the end of Guys and Dolls, this kind of like sixth or seventh most important character in the show actually has the biggest song in the whole show. It's like the only musical that's true.
Yeah.
And I didn't really tell them that this was happening. So they knew I had a big song right before intermission. It's Guys and Dolls, the big song. And he thinks that's it. He texted me, "Oh, great job." I said, "You just wait until the very end." And he said, "That was like hitting a game-winning three at the end of the musical."
Right. Sit down, you're rocking the boat. It was great. And the answer, I don't know anything about music. Jeffrey has had to correct me. I still call it country western music, even though he's in the business. He's had to say, "Dad, it's just country music now." So when it comes to music, sadly, I'm out.
All right. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
Arizona, spring training.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Although we went to Legoland when Jeffrey and Kelly were young. Jeffrey was a magician with Legos. He could build. I can't build Lego. I couldn't do it when I was a kid. I can't do it as an adult. But when we went to Legoland and we watched how excited he was only like 6 years old. That was amazing. But I agree. Our spring training experiences have been the best because we got out of the cold Northeast and went to Florida or to Arizona. Arizona's a great place in February and March for sure.
Nice. Favorite father-son duo in sports for you is?
That's a really good question. Well, I'll let you go first.
I'll start with Cal Ripken Sr. and Jr. since I covered them for the Baltimore Sun. So Cal Sr. was the manager of the team in 87, and Cal Jr. was the best player on the team, and Billy Ripken, the other Ripken, was the second baseman. So I covered a team where the dad was the manager and the double play combination were his two sons. I'll never forget it. Edward Bennett Williams, then the owner of the Orioles, he came to spring training. He saw all these Ripkins, and he just looked at me and he said, "Can we send more Ripkins? Like we need more of them." So that's always been my favorite father son because I watch them operate every single day.
Well, right. I had to steal from our first episode of Is This a Great Game or What? Because I learned something about Prince and Cecil Fielder, that they both ended their Major League Baseball careers with the same amount of home runs.
That's awesome.
What are the chances of that?
It's impossible. 319 homers for a father and son combination. This is why baseball is the greatest game, is those things happen way more often than you think.
Yeah, and I know people go to the – and it's they need to go to it a lot. It's just Ken Griffey Sr. and Jr. back-to-back home runs. To me, like, that is amazing as well, too. Last one. Jeff, you can go first, and Tim, you can follow. Top three words you hope your daughter would use to describe you as a dad. What would you want them to be?
That's a good question. I would say loving, because my dad was always very loving, to a point where we had to kisses on the head, which I now understand, and I kick myself forever, ever pushing my dad away as a kid, because the day that she does that to me, I will hide in my bedroom and cry, because I know I can't imagine, but I can understand as a teenager how that would not be cool. But I kick myself now because he's my dad and he's my best friend. So loving, funny. I mean, let's be honest, I'm always doing bits. When my baby was really small, I would get annoyed that here I am pretending to be a tap dancer and she's just not there yet. You know, she isn't entertained. And now she's starting to get my bits, peekaboo and jokes and all that. So like, funny is definitely important, but supportive, it will be my number one thing for sure, because I want her to feel like in whatever she wants to do, just like my dad, when I told him, I don't want to play baseball anymore, I want to perform on stage. That was a really hard conversation for me to muster up and say. It was not, if it was hard for him, he did not make it seem like it was for him, because he was so supportive and so proud of what I did on stage that supportive would definitely be my number one. That's what my dad has always been.
And I was relieved when Jeffrey said he doesn't want to play baseball anymore, because I recognized it had become too difficult for him. And I had to explain to him that, all right, you didn't play basketball in high school and were great like your sister, soccer, but what you gathered and what you've learned from being on stage and being in front of people, those skills will carry you for the rest of your life. And that's what I've always shown to Jeffrey, is what you have is a lifetime skill.
Tim, that is amazing. Support is just, that's what you want. Like, kids ultimately want the support, right? You were talking about mutual respect earlier, and just the fact that you see the skills that what he wants to do and his passions will help him in the future. Chef's kiss. So maybe he answered the top three words for you, what you wanted to subscribe, because he said loving. He's like, that's what he saw for you. So top three words that you hope your kids will usually describe you as a dad. What would you want?
Warm and kind are the two most important things. The third one is a little off, but it's curious. As a writer, being curious is extremely important. You have to look at things and say, when's the last time I saw that happen in a major league game? Or why did they take the pitcher out there? And that doesn't just go for baseball. It goes for your entire life. If you're curious and you're always asking questions to people so you can learn more, I think that's a really important thing for a young journalist and a young person of any kind. Keep your eyes open, listen to people, listen more than you talk, and be curious.
that's even good for just being a person like yeah. in this world. So great three words right there. Gentlemen, I wish you guys continued success with everything you're doing with your current professions. And obviously now with, is this a great game or what? Check out the podcast wherever you download podcasts. Follow Jeff on Twitter and Instagram at JP Kirchin, and follow, of course, Tim on Twitter at Kirchin underscore ESPN. Gentlemen, I know super busy, especially during the holiday weekend. It was really cool that you guys were able to take some time and chat with me, but this was such a blast and an honor. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks as always for checking out the Art of Fatherhood podcast. I really appreciate it. And I also appreciate Jim Morin over at Semper Smart Games for sponsoring this week's Art of Fatherhood podcast. They have a lot of great games. They have election night. They have math games. They have dice games. They have Blobby's Pizza. They have so many fun games. There's different ways that you and your family will have fun. For more information on them, go to SemperSmartGames.com or check them out on Amazon. They have a whole bunch of their games there as well. And while you're on the internet checking out Semper Smart Games, also please rate, subscribe, and review to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. I greatly appreciate it. And check out ArtOfFatherhood.net for the latest articles, contests, giveaways, reviews, all the things that tie into fatherhood and family. You can check it out over at artoffatherhood.net. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to artoffatherhood.net.